Chayo, Vishnupada, Paramahansa, Parivachakacharya, Astotata Sata Sri Srimad, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jaya Om Vishnupada Paramahansa Parivachakacharya Astatata Sata Sri Srimad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Chikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudevi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shamkund Radhakund Giri Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Pranayandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Guranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 50, Krishna Establishes Dwarka, and we're reading starting at verse 41. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we have four verses. The first three don't have purports, so we can read it together, but don't go too fast. I can't read too fast, okay? Evam sapta dashakritvas tatvat yakshohini bala yuyude magado raja yadu bi krishna palita. 17 times the king of Magda met defeat in this very way, and yet throughout these defeats, he fought on with his Akshahini divisions against the forces of the Yadu dynasty, who were protected by Sri Krishna. Text 42. Akshinam dastam balam sarvam Vishnaya Krishna tejasa Hateshu sveshvani keshu Tyakto gar aribhirnipaha. By the power of Lord Krishna, the Vrishnis would invariably annihilate all of Jarasandha's forces, and when all his soldiers had been killed, the king, released by his enemies, would again go away. Text 43. Ashtadakshamaksangrama Agamini tarantara Narada presito viro Yavana pratyadrishyata. Just as the 18th battle was about to take place, a barbarian warrior named Kala Yavana, sent by Narada, appeared on the battlefield. Text 44. So we're going to learn this verse. Rurodu Viroda Mataram Etya Tishribir Mlecha Kotibihi Niloke Chapriti Dvandvo Vishnin Shrutvatma Samitan Ruroda Mataram Etya Tishribir Malecha Kotipihi Niloke Chapriti Dvandvo Vrishnin Shrut Vatma Samhitan. Please chant. Ladies. Besieged. Mataram, Matara, Aitya, arriving there, Trishribi, times three, Malecha, with barbarians, Kotibi, 10 million, Nri Loke, among mankind, Cha, and Apriti Dwandvo. Dandavaha, having no suitable rival, Vrishnan, the Vrishnis, Shrutva, hearing, Atma, to himself, Samhitan, comparable. Translation. Arriving at Mathura, this Yavana laid siege to the city with 30 million barbarian soldiers. He had never found a human rival worth fighting, but he had heard that the Vrishnis were his equals. Please repeat. Arriving at Mathura, this Yavana laid siege to the city with 30 million barbarian soldiers. He had never found a human rival worth fighting, but he had heard that the Vrishnis were his equals. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes from the Vishnu Purana concerning the history of Kalyavana. Quote, once Gardya was ridiculed by his brother-in-law as a eunuch, and when the Yadavas heard this, they laughed heartily. Infuriated by their laughter, Gargya set out for the south, thinking, may I have a son who will bring terror to the Yadavas. He worshipped Lord Mahadev, eating powdered iron, and after 12 years obtained his desired benediction. Elated, he returned home. Later, when the childless king of the Yavanas requested a son from him, Gargya begot in the Yavana's wife a son, Kalyavana. Kalyavana possessed the fury of Lord Shiva in his aspect as Mahakala. Once, Kalyavana asked Narada, who are now the strongest kings on earth? Narada replied that the Yadus were. Thus, sent by Narada, Kalyavana appeared at Mathura. So, just going to read all the verses in context. 17 times the king of Magda met defeat in this very way. And yet throughout these defeats, he fought on with his Akshahini divisions against the forces of the Yadu dynasty, who were protected by Lord Krishna. By the power of Lord Krishna, the Vrishnis would invariably annihilate all of Jarasandha's forces, and when all his soldiers had been killed, the king, released by his enemies, would again go away. Just as the 18th battle was about to take place, a barbarian warrior named Kalayavana, sent by Narada, appeared on the battlefield. Arriving at Mathura, this Yavana laid siege to the city with 30 million barbarian soldiers. He had never found a human rival worth fighting, but he had heard that the Vrishnis were his equals. So we're continuing this story. First, we're hearing about how Jarasandha was defeated 17 times, and each time every one of his soldiers would be killed on the battlefield, and none of the soldiers on the other side would be harmed. And they would, each time they would release him, and he would come back with more soldiers. And we, in an earlier class, we understood that he was relieving the earth of its burden of these kings. And so Krishna wanted these people to die. And this is the facility that was arranged, that Jarasandha would each time foolishly be convinced that by his friends, so-called friends, that he should gather a new army and fight again. And this way, all these warriors who Krishna wanted to kill would just be brought to him very conveniently. He didn't have to go looking for them. But at the 18th time, this is referring to the 18th time that he was about to attack, this barbarian warrior, the Sanskrit is Mlecha. We use the word Mlecha a lot to refer to ourselves, or most of us who come from Mlecha backgrounds. I don't never thought of it as barbarian exactly. But I guess that's the description. So if it fits. So this barbarian warrior has a very interesting backstory, which we're hearing about in the purport. So when I went to the Krishna book to see how Prabhupada described the story, since Krishna book is a summary study, one thing I don't understand is he translates Gargya, the personality who's described here, Gargya, as Gargamuni. Maybe it was the disciples who made this error, but Prabhupada says that it was that the story is narrated in the Vishnu Purana, which is what that quote in the purport was from the Vishnu Purana. He's describing that Gargamuni, the priest of the Yadu dynasty, was taunted by his brother-in-law. But check the tapes. Well, the thing is that Gargya is described as his son. Or even, okay, I found another quote. Well, it's from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Okay, this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sorry, got the wrong quote. Srimad Bhagavatam 9:21-20. It says that from Garga came a son named Shini, and his son was Gargya. Gargya. Although Gargya was a Kshatriya, there came from him a generation of Brahmanas. So that's in the, that's one of the verses that Prabhupada translated. In any case, Gargya was ridiculed by his brother-in-law as a eunuch. So this is very interesting, because Okay, I guess I'm looking at it from the point of view of human relationships, that sometimes in life we may be ridiculed, we may be laughed at, and we have choices how we can deal with that. I mean, we can just let it go, and it won't be, you know, not be affected by it at all, just something that happens in life. Or we could take it to heart and feel bad. Or we could take it to the opposite extreme and really get bent out of shape. And this is what seems to have happened to Gergen. I mean, for 12 years, he ate powdered iron in order to, you know. What was that? You hope he had people. Maple syrup with it? I don't think so. He was serious about doing this penance because he wanted to get the blessings of Lord Shiva. But I mean, to hold on to that for so long. I mean, this is like, you know, you have to, I mean, I sometimes have, you know, thought about, like, why do we do the things we do? Is this something that has come up in my life, like with, like looking at why, you know, what is our real motivation in doing things? Okay, like I can give an example. Like when I joined the movement, I had been doing many nefarious things, being a hippie before as a devotee. So when I called my mother to say that I had joined the Hare Krishna movement and I was living in the temple in Boston, and she said to me, "Oh, you'll be doing something different in another week." Now, I could have continued my Krishna consciousness on the basis of, I'll show her, you know, this kind of. And maybe for, you know, sometime I did, I don't know. But after a while, you know, I have to examine my reasons for joining the Hare Krishna movement. Is it for that? Just to, you know, prove my mother wrong kind of thing? Or is it, you know, on a basis of, I want to purify my existence, I want to develop love of God? I mean, there has to come a point where you choose for the right reasons. So anyway, in this case, for 12 years, Gargi did not let go of this. And he did obtain a boon from Lord Shiva. However, Shiva can be a little tricky, and this is where it's described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita 1.3.24, verse says, when such enemies of the Vaishnavas as Gargya worshipped you, this is a verse talking to Lord Shiva, by severe penances, the benedictions you gave them were not without loopholes. Okay, so this is a little problem for, you know, when you get a benediction, if there's a loophole, then you kind of, you got a problem there. So how it manifested was that his desire was to kill the Yavanas, but instead, well, let me just read the purport and you'll understand. It says, because Gargya and others were inimical to the Yadavas and the Pandavas, who were all staunch Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva rewarded their worship with imperfect boons. According to the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 2.1, Gargya Baliki was a learned son of the sage Garga, who was too proud of his acquired knowledge. By Lord Shiva's blessing, Gargya obtained a son, but not one who could destroy the Yadu dynasty as Gargya had wanted, only one who could frighten and frustrate the Yadus. And it says that the full story of this hapless devotee, and there's a few other examples, Jayadrath, who received the limited boon that he could defeat each of the Pandavas once, except for Arjuna. But anyway, they're described as hapless devotees of Lord Shiva. So the full stories are described in the Sri Hari Vamsa, the Vishnu Purana, and the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what he really wanted was to kill the Yadus, but all he didn't get to do that. Well, the story will unfold in the next verses. But it's also interesting that Narada Muni is the catalyst in this story. I know that in, not that I've watched the Hindi movies, but I've heard tell that Narada is typically portrayed as, funny man. Usually has a sika sticking straight up. I have seen a picture of that. And he's just not really given the respect that he deserves, because he makes things happen sometimes. And it almost seems that he's to blame for those things. But he's just like forwarding the action in the stories. And in this case, it's described that he was sent, Kaliyavana was sent by Narada, but really he's, just making the action happen smoother. So back to the point of why Gargya was ridiculed. I don't really know why they came up with this idea of him being a eunuch. There was a conversation that Srila Prabhupada had with Hayagriva in April of 1967 in San Francisco. Prabhupada was asking him to put on a drama about Lord Chaitanya, and he was giving the description of a scene when Lord Chaitanya appeared, and Srila Prabhupada was saying how that just like when Lord Krishna appeared, Garga Muni was giving blessings. So same thing when Lord Chaitanya appeared, that there was a priest or someone who was there to give the blessings of the newborn child. And Srila Prabhupada was trying to come up with the English word to describe that person, and he said, he isn't neither male nor female. And so Hayagriva said, hermaphrodite? Hermaphrodite? And Prabhupada, didn't agree with that, and then they finally hit on the word eunuch. And so then he said that, when I started researching the difference between eunuch and the hermaphrodite, there is some similarity, but he was saying that is the type of person who has, he said there's a community of people that are neither male nor female, and one of the things they do is give blessings when a baby is born. So, to define, a hermaphrodite means a person who's born with neither full male or full female reproductive organs. And they're, it really could be described as neither male nor female, but the tendency would be to say that they're more feminine. And Prabhupada was even also saying feminine. So, if a man is not fully just masculine, then I guess the alternative is to be feminine. So a eunuch, on the other hand, is usually, and this is what Hayagriva was saying, he's saying castrated, a male who's castrated. So that's typically how, in this day and age anyway, we think of a eunuch as a male who's castrated. So they could be castrated at birth, and this is actually done in some cultures, so that boy will grow up without the masculine hormones and therefore be more feminine. And this is the type of person that would be used in royal palaces to guard the females in a palace, to guard the queen, the princesses. They sometimes also castrate a male later in life, and again, it's for the purpose of I have a full description of how this has been handled, because I went to the source of called Wikipedia, Bhakti Wikipedia, and this is the description of eunuch. It's a man who, by common definition of the term, may have been castrated typically early enough in his life for this change to have major hormonal consequences. In some ancient texts, eunuch may refer to a man who is not castrated, but who is impotent, celibate, or otherwise not inclined to marry and procreate. Castration was typically carried out on the soon-to-be eunuch without his consent in order that he might perform a specific social function. This was common in many societies. Eunuchs would probably be servants or slaves who, because of their function, had been castrated, usually in order to make them reliable servants of a royal court where physical access to the ruler could wield great influence. So if you get the ear of the ruler, if you get close to the ruler, then the understanding is you could have influence over that person. And so even it was described further on in Wikipedia how sometimes eunuch would specifically refer to the person who would be helping the king in his bedroom, like tuck him into bed and help him when he get up in the morning and like that. So that's pretty close. You have to really trust that person in every respect. Also, when I was looking at like biblical references, and it was described that Queen Esther's eunuchs are mentioned in the Bible. And it says that people were, in ancient times, they would castrate servants to subdue and pacify them. So, and to guard the royal harem, as in like Queen Esther's harem. So, it was a really, I can understand, and we can understand that it was an insult to refer to a virile male as a eunuch. And obviously it really, really bothered Kalyavana. However, when we read the Mahabharata, we learn about Arjuna taking the role of a eunuch for a year. And the reason he did that was because he was cursed. One time Arjuna was visiting his father's palace, Indra. And Indra actually offered Urvasi, one of the heavenly maidens of Indra's palace, and these heavenly maidens are just, you know, beyond description of beautiful and attractive and so on. And they don't ever age. They're always beautiful. So Indra, you know, had noticed that, you know, there was an attraction. You know, Urvasi was so beautiful that Arjuna was attractive. So he offered her to Arjuna. And so Urvasi went to Arjuna's room one night, and she wanted to have sexual relationships with him, but he refused because he called her mother. He saw her as the mother of the Kuru race, because at one time she had been married to the king of the Kurus, his King Puru, right? King Puru. So Urvasi was so insulted because she saw it as like a mere mortal was able to resist her beauty. And so she cursed Arjuna because of this and said he would be a eunuch for the rest of his life. But later on, Indra was able to convince her that she would reduce the curse to only 1 year. And this year would be the 13th year of the Pandavas' exile. So for 12 years, they were able to live where they wanted, and, you know, but the 13th year, they had to live in society And so they were living incognito, and that was the role that he took. Well, it was interesting that when he came to King Bharata's kingdom, and he was calling himself Brihanala. Well, King Bharata was questioning whether Arjuna was really a eunuch, and somehow or other, despite his grave suspicions, someone checked it out and confirmed that he was really a eunuch. So he was given the service of being the dance master of Princess Uttara, and lived among the women and was making friends with all the other women. So at the end of that year, Pandavas, it was suspected that the Pandavas were living in King Bharata's kingdom. So the Kauravas attacked the kingdom and stole the cows. So the Pandavas wanted to do something about this. And so Draupadi, who was calling herself Shairandri, she went to King Bharata's son, Prince Uttara Kumar, and she convinced him that he should fight the attacking Kauravas. So he went out onto the battlefield, and Shairandri convinced him to have as his chariot driver Brihanala and Arjuna. And she told him that he used to be Arjuna's chariot driver and that he was well known for this. And so anyway, she was able to convince Prince Uttara to go out on the battlefield. But pretty soon as when they went out there and he saw the opposing forces, he totally got cold feet, and he was running off the battlefield, and Arjuna was running after him, trying to convince him to come back. And so it's described that he revealed the secret of who he was, and then he convinced the prince to go to this particular tree. And up in the tree, it looked like, they had left, had created rumors saying that it was a dead body that was hung in this tree, and it was all wrapped up, so it looked like a dead body. And everybody thought it was, it's cursed, and, it's inauspicious to touch it. And he said, no, these are the weapons, our weapons. And he convinced him to bring down the bundle. And he unwrapped it, and there was the Gandiva bow, and there was this, arrows, and all of the weapons of the Pandavas. And but still, actually, the prince wasn't convinced that this was really Arjuna, and he said, "You have to tell me your different names." So there was 10 names Arjuna had. Does anybody know these 10 names? Or some of the names? See a hand back there, Ananda Tirtha Prabhu? Kiriti, yes? Pibatsu, yes? What was that? Dhananjaya, yes? Partha, yes? Partha? What was that? Falguni, yes? Kuntia? No. Kanteya? No. I mean, I think it's not one. What was that? Yes, Savyasachin. Savyasachi, yes. What was that? No. Never. No. Maybe it's the 10 principal names, yeah. But I thought I heard somebody say Jishnu. Did somebody say Jishnu? Huh? Well, that's one of them. That's not one of the 10 they described here, but... I think the only name... Okay, there's a couple of names you missed. Vijaya and Sveta Vahana. Sveta Vahan. Have you heard that name? So Arjuna was one of the names also, which obviously no. So I think we covered them all. So anyway, once he said the names, then the prince was convinced, and then Arjuna and the other Pandavas came forward and defeated the Kauravas. And then there was some question about had they blown their cover, and what, you know, the Kauravas were saying they had to go back into seclusion for another 13 years because they were found out. But then it turned out that actually the time was calculated wrong and the time actually was complete, and so that was the completion of their 13 years in exile. To go back to the verse, so there was the idea that he had to, that Kalyavana had never found a human rival worth fighting, and therefore he was going after the Vrishnis, who were his equals. So this just reminds me of, what was the demon's name that had so many arms, and he, Vanasura, I was thinking. Just, it seems that it comes up that if you have a lot of strength and you don't have a chance to exercise using that strength, you don't have a rival who's weak, equal to be fought, then you're searching. These people would be searching for someone to have a good fight. And even, you know, Krishna fighting the demons, that he wanted to have a good fight, and sometimes even his own devotees would take the role of demons, even also in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes as well, just to have a really good fight. And this is, I personally find the fighting idea a little hard to understand, maybe because I'm identify too much with being a woman, but it just, like, I don't personally don't enjoy seeing boxing, but for instance, like it goes on in the material world, fighting or wrestling, but or even football, to me, is along the same lines. I just don't get it. But I guess, you know, there is a distinct difference between male and females and what we like, and that kind of goes back to this understanding how insulted Gargi was by being called a eunuch, because, you know, people identify with the gender that we are born into, and you know, there's just differences, and if, you know, that's how Krishna arranged it, so he didn't really, I don't understand necessarily how Krishna arranged this in-between sex. In the modern days, what I was seeing on the internet, they don't refer to it as hermaphrodite. They say intersex. Is that what they're saying? Can't think. I can't remember. They came up with another term which I hadn't heard of. I think it's called intersex. Is that what's politically correct these days? Yeah, that's, transgender has another meaning. It means they actually change from male to female, female to male. But anyway, this is all I have to say about these verses. I do want to say that this is the last class I'll be giving for a very long time, because In less than a month, I'll be going to my quote-unquote Christmas marathon in a mall. And then I'll be back for a few days, but then I'll be going to California to take on the role of being a grandma. Yeah, because my daughter-in-law is due to give birth in about a month, and my son and daughter-in-law have asked me to be their nanny. So I'll be taking leave before I go. However, I am going to complete the new directory for the community, and anybody hearing this who hasn't told me one way or another if they're listing in the directory is correct or not. Even if it's entirely correct, I need to know that. And I've sent out a lot of emails that haven't been answered, and I need to get that information so that we can complete the directory. And the value of the directory is that devotees can be in communication with one another, and it's really important in a community this size, the largest one in North America, that devotees have access to contact each other. So we definitely want to complete this. And one aspect of the directory is photographs. And although I myself am not in charge of the photographs, it is really important. Devotees really appreciate seeing the pictures of the devotees with their name, and put name and face together, and you can figure out who's who. So unless we get a new picture, we're going to use the old pictures, which is not any fun, really. We've seen them before. So I request that you send pictures of your family. Jai Radhe, who works in the temple office, is in charge of that. And every week on the temple newsletter, there's her email address is there, so you can contact her. If you don't get the temple newsletter, call the temple office so that you will get the temple newsletter. And at that time, you can, you know, get the information you need to send the pictures. It's important. Okay? What? I have a chosen deadline, but I'm not sure if the other devotees working on the directory have the same deadline. But because I'm going to my mall at the end of October, my deadline is the 15th of October. So before the 15th of October, I request that you complete this. And the last section that I haven't mentioned is the business directory, and that's also helpful so we can network and hire devotees to do things that we might not know that somebody's proficient in some field. So we have a business directory, and that section is done by Gopishvari, and her email is in the newsletter. So I'm just doing the phone list and the address list. Not just, that's like the essence of the directory. And so that's all the sections. Photos, the business directory, phone list, address list. Okay? So thank you very much. And oh, one more detail I want to share with you. In a year from today, I will turn the age that Srila Prabhupada was when he arrived in America. So, I'm sure. Okay, Steve, do you mind?
Well, today is your birthday. We all came to your class.
Didn't bring you presents, sorry. I did give a present away to a young devotee. I gave a Christmas ornament in the shape of a cow to his youngest daughter. So that was my symbolic present to all of you. Hare Krishna. I gave a glass of Hare Krishna. And I just want to share one more thing. The other day, Leelananda gave a very fired up class on Saturday. And afterwards I was talking to him, and he said to me that he was in the movement 1 week when he gave his first Bhagavatam class. So I just want to say I was in the movement 33 years before I ever gave a Bhagavatam class. So I just want to request that you give slack and, you know, give mercy, even though it's, you know, I'm 33 years behind other people who joined the movement when I did. And just because I've been a devotee for a long time doesn't mean that, you know, I'm going to give a good class. That's my disclaimer. In any case, yeah. Most women who are in the movement for a very long time and are not giving class, the reason is they have a phobia about it. And phobias are very hard to break. So it's just so many years of seeing other people give class. You know, the young devotees, young men typically would come to the movement and give class, and they become very good speakers. And then after a while, you just see, like, you know, I'm just never going to do this. I know that I was in that space for a very long time, and it took a lot before I'd even agree to give class. Because when you give class, you kind of reveal a lot about yourself. It's much easier to be a wallflower at the back of the room and just listen. So thank you for listening. I just have more questions or comments or corrections. Yeah, I'm thinking in terms of a year and a half or 2 years. That my son is in American Film Institute, which is an excellent film school, but super intense. Like, there's no time to work while he's in school, in this school. So, assuming it's going to work out nicely, yeah, while he's in school, and he won't graduate till May of 2016. And then presumably he can start his career in the film industry. And not that he's starting the career, but he'll continue it on a new level. It'll take a little while to get started, so. My being there to be their nanny will free up his wife to work. This is the modern way, right? The grandparents will help out. So, pardon? It's traditional. Yeah, the extended family, but usually, don't the son and the daughter-in-law come and live with the parents, right? That's the traditional way. It's a little different, modern twist to it. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.